Hey everyone, and welcome to the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. Today is podcast number 62, and I am George Taylor. We spent the last several podcasts looking at the newest releases from Narration by George. The Destined and A Study in Scarlet are available for you to download from Audible.com, the iTunes Store, Audiobooks.com, BooksAMillion.com, and on Amazon. You can find links to all of these by going to my website, narrationbygeorge.com/books, and click on the link for the book that you are interested in. This week, we're going to look forward to books that are in production or about to be released. Our first story is really a short story. This is a new genre for me. I've never recorded anything which might be called a horror story before. Now, I'm a lover of Hitchcock and The Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits and all of those. This new story falls into that realm of storytelling. The story is entitled Slimmer. It is by author Regina Puckett. Now, we've talked with Regina on this podcast before. She is an author who doesn't specialize. She writes in the romance genre and writes poetry, both of which I've recorded for her. She also writes children's books and steampunk, and she tells horror tales. Slimmer is the story of Donald and Sandy. Donald thinks that Sandy needs to lose some weight, so he shares some pills he and his associate have developed in their lab. "You did what?" Donald turned and looked around the room, even though he knew there was only he and Richard scheduled to work in the lab that day. Richard copied him, and he too looked around. He lowered his voice. "Are you crazy? We're still only in the beginning stages of testing for those diet pills. You have no idea what kind of side effects they might have. They've never been tested on humans before. You could lose your job, or worse, go to prison." Donald leaned back against the counter and eyed Richard. "Who's going to ever know? I know you'll never tell." Richard pulled at the collar of his lab coat. "What makes you so certain?" "Because you don't want me telling anyone about the little synthetic cocaine lab you have set up over there. You would be in that prison cell right next to me." Beads of sweat broke out across Richard's top lip. "I don't understand why you want Sandy to take those pills anyway. She's beautiful." Donald grinned. "All I need in a girlfriend is someone who looks good on my arm and knows when to keep her mouth shut. I hate fat chicks. Sandy had better stay thin or she's out. When this diet pill hits the market, we'll be rich and famous. She needs to keep her looks up if she wants to be a part of my success, or I'll replace her with a new, better model." Sandy hated to admit it, but Donald's diet pill was working much better than she ever expected it would. Well, almost. It did give her tons of energy, but she was still starving to death. Earlier at lunch, she had run out to her favorite donut shop and bought a dozen. The plan had been to split them with her co-workers, but on the way back, she stopped on a park bench to relax, and when she grabbed the box to return to work, she discovered it was empty. It was horrifying to think she had eaten an entire dozen donuts all by herself, so she threw the box into the nearest trash can to get rid of the evidence. Even though she had eaten more than she had planned to, she felt wonderful. Her energy levels were off the scale. Since consuming the donuts, she had been up those stairs 5 times to the 12th floor without even becoming winded. Surely, after all that exercise, she would have walked off such a high-fat, sugar-loaded lunch. Knowing Donald would be watching every bite she put into her mouth at dinner, she stopped at a hamburger joint a few blocks from their apartment building and grabbed a light snack before heading home. A twinge of guilt nagged at her as she let herself into the apartment because her snack had consisted of a triple cheeseburger, large fries, and a Coke. But even after eating all that, her stomach was still grumbling about being empty. She hoped Donald wasn't home yet, so she could grab another quick snack out of the refrigerator. What he didn't know wouldn't hurt him. "Donald, you home?" She threw her purse on the sofa and listened for any sounds of him. Nothing. She made a mad dash to the kitchen and looked through what food they had in the house. Since they had been busy the last weekend getting the apartment arranged to their satisfaction, they hadn't taken the time to go grocery shopping, so choices were limited. The only thing that didn't need cooking were two slices of bread, a jar of mayo, and one of pickles. Never in a million years would she ever have thought of making a snack out of those ingredients. But before she even thought about what she was doing, she grabbed it all up and made a mayo and pickle sandwich. Just as she was putting the last bite of the sandwich in her mouth, she heard keys being placed into the front door. She chewed as fast as she could as she looked around to make certain she hadn't left any evidence. Satisfied there weren't any crumbs on the counter, she poured a glass of water and washed the taste of pickles and mayo out of her mouth. The last thing she needed was Donald to kiss her and figure out what she had been doing in the kitchen. You'll have to listen to the story to find out how much weight Sandy loses and how much she eats. The book will be available soon from Audible.com, and it'll be in the iTunes library. I'll let you know when. A reminder that Regina Puckett's fourth book in the Warren family series, Love's Great Plan, is in production now here at Narration by George. We should have it out about the end of June, and it'll be available at the Audible.com store or in the iTunes store or on Amazon.com. Check for it then. I'm just beginning preparation for my latest book, a science fiction book. Michael Miller, who is the author of The Sixth Lobe and Born to Matter, has penned a trilogy of science fiction books. I will produce the third of these books, entitled Second Earth, M104. I've got a bit of this book for you to hear, but let me set the stage for this book. The first book of this trilogy, Time Folds, tells the story of physicist Bruce Thompson. Thompson sets off on a space voyage some 37 years before the book's year 2050 setting, and while in space, Thompson makes some amazing discoveries and develops robots to assist him in his chores on this solo journey. Among the discoveries is an Earth-like planet, Messier 104, and that time folds back on itself, so a 37-year journey can be made in a much shorter period of time. This second discovery allows him to return to Earth, even though he is presumed lost in space. But he doesn't return alone. He is followed by an alien from Messier 104 who is not friendly. The second book, Intergalactic War, tells the story of a battle between Earth and the emissaries of Messier 104. The final book of the series, Second Earth M104, peeks into the mission which returns to Messier 104 after the intergalactic battle. In this segment that you'll hear, we'll see some of the preparation being made for this journey. Gazing down into the last of three deep craters, multiple heavy 50-cubic-yard clamshell cranes lift dirt and rocks from the hole and dump contents into giant 400-ton Terex dump trucks waiting their turn. Dr. Bruce Thompson, Dr. Kip Thorne, and Dr. Chipper Davis, Global Space Company laboratory pals from the late 1900s, chat about pace of 24/7 activity and the aggressive timeline. Meanwhile, the second of three holes have finished reinforced concrete after pouring massive amounts that would complete a solid platform built upon hydraulic lifts that will raise contents to the surface. While providing a temperature-controlled environment, lab, and construction area nestled safely underground, hidden from foreign satellites, the scientific trio remains uneasy, despite excellent progress. Inside the first cavity, already covered with a massive iron and steel door, a confiscated five-story M-104 alien spaceship, cleverly taken during initial hostile engagement inside the Milky Way, is being studied and analyzed for replication with the help of its alien commander, a 7-foot, 500-pound cybernetic android, almost destroyed by Dr. Bruce Thompson's formidable creation, Ozzy. To accelerate the timeline for duplication, engineering blueprints, specifications, and modules is subcontracted with Boeing, Raytheon, Goodrich, DynCorp, Rockwell, General Dynamics, and host of other specialized industrial firms. Strict confidentiality agreements, once signed, are ruthlessly enforced. Other firms, hesitant to participate due to serious consequences for contract breaches, are not included. Receiving massive enthusiastic support from tycoon Charles Rutherford Taylor, an elderly crafty billionaire with fingers in many federal and military honeypots, Project Mega forges ahead with amazing speed that typical government bureaucratic operations could never meet in terms of management, engineering skills, budget, reliability, testing, and timeliness. Due to dire predictions that Mega, M-104's god and creator, would return with more combat vessels of unknown power, Wilford, Taylor, Thompson, and other grim-faced leaders propel the project as the ultimate clarion call. Compared to the shuttle program that took 9 years to get initially flawed space vehicles into space, this intergalactic program advanced, relatively speaking, at the speed of light. With the immense venture overseen by Taylor's oldest and gifted son, Larry, Ph.D. in high-energy physics in his late 30s, Thompson, impressed most with managerial negotiation and deal-making talents, his deft brain and heady degree icing on the cake. Until then, Larry Taylor had overseen massive ordnance production in the family's extensive and lethal portfolio, hell-bent on keeping America number one. Able to quote Bible and verse for kill ratios of any major weapon system, Larry is one of the most valuable civilian patriots, according to military brass. Accordingly, he's guarded like an American president when outside company gates. What was considered reckless by Dr. Bruce Thompson when the initial alien threat arose, Larry Taylor's responsibilities included the design and production of the massive 50,000 kiloton tactical Titan IV nuclear direct energy weapon used to eliminate two alien vessels from Messier 104. Codename Reverence, the premature explosion outside the exosphere, less than 1 million miles from the planet, caused by an alien laser beam striking the rocket's nose, sent terrifying tidal waves of unknown kinetic energy, eliminating part of the alien threat, but also destroying hundreds of orbiting satellites, American and foreign. To make matters worse, the explosion's electromagnetic pulse destroyed much of the Russian electric power grid due to an untimely planet axis position absorbing the mother load. With Russian power company Rosetti scrambling after many months, recent joint efforts by China, Europe, and feckless United Nations sped network power restoration. Larry told me we're on schedule with various labs around the country to build alien replicates, Thompson tells friends Kip and Chipper. But I fear we will not have proper time for testing all the new equipment. Some work may have to be en route. Have you boys ever done spacewalks? Spacewalks? Are you nuts? Kip whines substantially. At my age, that's not overly appealing. Of course, you being older won't make my case. Yes, but you had Ozzy, Chipper engages in the minor sarcastic debate referencing Thompson's creation in M-104 that made his return home possible after almost 4 decades in space. I could do it if I had him carrying my bags. Oh, is that right? Bruce rejoined, sneering. Harriet gets some of the credit. Maybe I should start you fellows on her regimen of alaminin cell proteins and telomere replicative senescence treatments. That stuff is dynamite and would boost spirits, maybe even stimulate a can-do attitude for a change. Sounds horribly invasive. Does it involve needles? Kip says squeamishly about bodily intrusions. I'm not partial to injections. You guys are sissies. If I can do it, so can you. Besides, I need you strong and alert, running the labs for the next few years. Project Mega is run by us, not the military.
Yes, boss. Chipper follows dejectedly. Maybe Harriet can put me to sleep or catch me while I'm napping.
Forget it. She's riding with me on Genesis 2. I can have a couple of minions handle your needs.
Minions? Kip objects spiritedly. Those little ugly trolls don't have Harriet's touch. Besides, she is special. I'd be a little braver if I had her poking me.
And how old are you guys? Bruce chuckles while wondering if they had seen doctors or dentists for any kind of treatment. Let me see what I can do about it. I have an idea that might work. Until then, Harriet can administer treatments. How does that suit you?
Both scientists nod reluctantly, finally realizing it's not a request.
Will we show the Messier 104 robots we'll have on board to the families when they come see us off?
Chipper says, with tone suggesting what he prefers. Bruce ponders it for a moment.
We thought about it, but Wilford and the Joint Chiefs nixed the idea. They don't want to take chances. Russians, Chinese, or others see them or get pictures. In fact, he'll be going after those responsible for the attacks on Area 51, the assault at Andrews, and other special ops I hear were quite intense. Charles Taylor mentioned his son Mike handled a Chinese hit team that was supposed to capture or kill yours truly.
Wow, that's incredible, Kip remarks sadly. Those bastards would actually kill one of the smartest men on this planet?
Neanderthals is all I've got to say about that.
Chipper is less diplomatic.
Cavemen, more likely. I've made friends with one of the Delta lads guarding Andrews. He said they found saws on a few of the bodies trying to capture you.
What's a saw?
Kip asked, thinking there is more to the attacks than what anyone knows in its entirety except the White House and top brass. Chipper grimaces.
16 pounds of pure hell. I hear Miss Gray fired it inside Masada, protecting Stephen and her boss from a Russian Spetsnaz. It took a head off.
Gee, Chipper, do you have to be so graphic? Bruce whines, shaking his head. I've heard the CIA is planning to use modified docks, supporting Delta, Green Berets, and Navy SEALs. He asked me to help, but I declined due to our crazy schedule. Larry Taylor is handling it from here.
I can see why they'd want docks, but why not replicate Dak instead? He'd make the best android fighter.
Kip says, referencing two advanced cybernetic robots captured along with the M-104 spaceship and one smaller attack craft. Bruce wonders how much he should share about top-secret functional differences between Dak and Dox, if only to protect his friends from horrors that will take place on Earth while deep in space.
Wilford isn't going to forget what happened. Russians and Chinese have behaved horribly during the crisis. Dak or his minions could have destroyed all of us, if not for his mission to capture Ozzy, Harriet, and me. The next time mega spaceships pop through the time fold, they won't be coming to capture anyone. That's why our timeline is extra tight. In general, let's just say that Dox is more controllable than Dak due to the way algorithm sequence stacks within core processors. Dox is far less complex and doesn't take as much time replicating upon trial and error like fine-tuning grand pianos. Think of it as the difference between ballet dancers and sumo wrestlers.
I realize the gap is an unbelievable 28 million light-years, Bruce. But what if Mega's crew arrives when we're traveling? Earth will be wide open for attack. Home may not be here when we return, he adds,
an unfathomable outcome Bruce appreciates more than most.
I've pondered that problem many times. But remember, the time fold cuts time dramatically. Anyway, our plan is staggering vessels we're building to find them, if that's the case. Once through the time fold, we'll sweep for them before getting anywhere near M-104.
That's why we're beefing up offensive weapon systems along the line of Genesis. Ozzy and I built them to pulverize smaller objects like ice and rocks inside an asteroid belt, but were undoubtedly handy when Mega's crew started shooting at us.
Do we have names for the ships? Chipper says, looking down the deep hole, hoping to get the boss off in time's thinking.
Yeah, I'm thinking USS Intrepid, Defiant, and Genesis 2. What do you think?
Both colleagues nod with pinched lips.
That'll do, Kip agrees. Those names are from Star Trek, right?
Yep, Genesis was a planet in the movie, but you're right. I took some liberties. Let's move underground and look at the lab we're designing inside Defiant. Since that's your lab, Kip, I think you should have the final say. In fact, you and Chipper should concur, since Defiant and Intrepid will have the same configuration.
What about the lab in Genesis 2?
Dak, Ozzy, Harriet, and I are going to make a few adjustments to take advantage of Dr. Hugh Brown's uncanny feel for futuristic weapons, as we'll bring up the rear entering the time fold and taking on Mega's ships if en route. You boys will proceed to the planet and begin operations. First thing, we'll be setting up high-orbit satellites and command of airspace complements of Charles Taylor.
What kind of modifications are you making for Genesis, Bruce?
Kip follows, first time hearing the news.
Let's hope they're not needed, but just in case, Dr. Brown is studying magnetoplasma rockets. He's also fine-tuning what Boeing's X-37C railgun was trying to accomplish against Zik, the alien ship we'll be flying.
Ozzy came up with the original idea, and Dak agrees it'll work much better with a few changes. Naturally, all three ships will have E-pulse cannons from the first Genesis for self-defense. They worked wonders inside the asteroid belt, clearing paths between fairly large pieces of rock and ice, and nobody knows what we'll face.
How do the E-pulse weapons work?
Kip presses his longtime mentor. I assume you're talking about laser or plasma technology.
Sensing the question is seeking detailed specs among trusted friends, Thompson explains basic concepts he taught Ozzy a few years earlier.
I think the Navy's progress might be closer right now to my design, but it's still unique. Original emphasis arose from survival inside a giant asteroid belt pushing us in different directions than Star Wars or fixed platforms. We needed quick response bursts that could blast or split unexpected large objects in our path. It's what saved us more than direct fire at Mega's vehicles. A key difference from laser beams is fluid intake connecting internal heat cables linked with titanium outer casing. Once plasma energy passes through redesigned copper plating and into heat tubes and reaction chamber, it mixes with radiated nickel powder. Once that happens, it's almost ready inside a stainless steel core. Finally, a high-voltage plasma ignition electrifies the particles to millions of degrees in a matter of split seconds. Because of that, the mini-reactor generates extreme pressure inside the thermocouplers that then push the E-pulse burst through the tube and out to the target. All this occurs in split seconds, but it's more like Nadion pulse cannons than small particle beams.
Wow, that's some kind of radical design, Kip says, puzzling over the process.
So it fires like spitballs from plastic straws rather than steady streams?
Yeah, I suppose that's about right, Thompson winks, noting his friend's keen sense of humor.
Lucky for me, I had Ozzy to install and test them. We had to place enough of them to cover almost every angle of attack.
You often amaze me, Bruce. In fact, how you altered behavior of Dax and Docs ranks right up there.
Chipper changes topics, complimenting the boss.
I suppose by building Ozzy and Harriet, you understood what had to be done about their inherent belligerence.
After swapping memory, logic, voice box, articulators, controllers, and middleware, it wasn't hard.
Bruce smiles a bit sarcastically, normal humility on display.
English language helps as well, rather than that terrible click-clack malbage noise I'll never understand. You think Mega would come up with something a little nicer to the ears, but I suppose it fits with a demented mind. Essentially, I turned what Dak used to see as hostile enemies into binary sequencing of good versus evil. Dak believes he's making choices without guidance from me.
Mega must be a monster, considering what he builds and how he programs these terrible creations to destroy. In an odd, perhaps sadistic way, however, I can't wait seeing these dinosaur-like machines you've described. That's got to be exhilarating and creepy. I wonder why he chose those characteristics.
Who knows for certain? Intimidation is likely what he has in mind. For me, Mega is a definite worry, but I doubt you'll want to be too close to his monsters, Bruce admits candidly to his pals. I don't understand him as an engineer. I don't know what he looks like or why he focuses on destructive machinery. Maybe his mother dropped him as a child, but it's completely wasted talent. Nothing I saw on the Blue Planet was for pleasure, entertainment, or recreation. It was all designed to fight, to kill, and to dominate. When I see him for the first time, it's apt to be a scary moment. Maybe for him, too, Kip adds, noting his best friend deep in thought, likely fretting over the mission's outcome. Breaking the ice. You've beaten him twice. By the way, how are Dak, Harriet, and Ozzy getting along these days? What can I say? Bruce blows cheeks upon pausing briefly, once transitioning from potential images of Mega. They're like adult children living at home, he snickers. What do you mean? Kip presses. How are adapted for cybernetic androids like children? Well, for one, they're fiercely competitive with different personalities, despite my best middleware efforts to corral them. Two, I have to referee disputes when they disagree. And three, let's just say that raising children was never my strong suit. Next time you see Stephen, ask him.
By the way, where is Stephen? If he's going to run the lab on Genesis 2, should he not also agree?
Chipper adds to the affable conversation. Certainly, but you can take that up with him. I guess he's sweet on one of Amy Gray's astrophysicists at Masada. I allowed him a special 2-day pass, so he's testing the waters inside the Arizona Butte as we speak.
Isn't that a bit optimistic for him, since we don't know how long we'll be gone?
I told you guys, raising kids isn't easy. Kid? He's almost 40, Bruce. Compared to old geezers like us, he's a kid. Now, can we get back to work, or do I have to find you fellas copies of Dr. Spock's Guide on Parenting? I'm not an expert. And by the way, Harriet will start your treatments later today.
I was hoping you were kidding, Kip whined substantially. Just what's in that concoction you take?
It's only shots, but diet, weight training, and hybrid teas. For the injections, it's laminin cell proteins and telomere replicative senescence. It's the heart of cell regeneration and growth. For instance, keratinoctites can heal wounds, scratches, and other types of common maladies. If I'd started sooner, my hair wouldn't be gray, according to Harriet. She thinks her hybrid teas and Daniel's diet is equally important, so please indulge our fellas.
Does that mean I don't get beer and chips?
Chipper wonders. Not on this trip. But I'm bringing a couple of cases of scotch and whiskey. Of course, that's between you and me. Kip shakes his head at Chipper. Both of us could stand to lose a few pounds, and I think we're about to get the opportunity. That's from Michael Miller's book, Second Earth, M104. This audiobook will be out about the end of July. Right now you can find the first two books of this series as produced by other narrators on Audible.com and in the iTunes store. Well, that's our time for this week's narration by George Podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. Hope you've enjoyed this look forward. Next week, I want to share some spiritual encouragement with you. It will be a message of encouragement to anyone who may be struggling as they walk with Jesus. Be sure to join me then. Until then, connect with me if you will. I'm on Facebook. Be sure and like my page, Narration by George. Or you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Narration by Geo. Or go to my website, narrationbygeorge.com. Click the Contact Me link, and I will be glad to respond to the message that you can send to me there. In the meanwhile, God has blessed you. Share that blessing with someone else.